Many of my colleagues are preaching the message of defying hate this week in response to the new documentary on Unitarians Martha and Waitstill Sharp. This sermon that I'm about to offer is being preached this morning by the Reverend Shelley Page at the UU Church of Ogden, Utah, and I'm offering it to you with her permission, with a little bit of my own words mixed in. Shelley starts by recalling the photo of a young Syrian boy taken this past summer, sitting silently in an ambulance after an airstrike on Aleppo, covered in blood and dust. The boy, Omran, became an iconic image of the toll the conflict in Syria is taking on its people and the ongoing refugee crisis it has created. And then she reads this letter from Alex, who is 6 years old and lives just outside of New York City with his mom and his dad and his little sister, Catherine. Dear President Obama, remember the boy who was picked up by the ambulance in Syria? Can you please go get him and bring him to my home? Park in the driveway or on the street, and we will be waiting for you guys with flags, flowers, and balloons. We will give him a family, and he will be our brother. Catherine, my little sister, will be collecting butterflies and fireflies for him. In my school, I have a friend from Syria, Omar, and I will introduce him to Omar. We can all play together. We can invite him to birthday parties, and he will teach us another language. We can teach him English, too, just like my friend Eyoto from Japan. Please tell him that his brother will be Alex, who is a very kind boy, just like him. Since he won't bring toys and doesn't have toys, Catherine will share her big, blue, stripy, white bunny. And I will share my bike, and I will teach him how to ride it. I will teach him additions and subtractions in math. And he can smell Catherine's lip gloss, Penguin, which is green. She doesn't let anyone touch it. Thank you very much. I can't wait for you to come. Alex. And then Shelley goes on to talk about this new film, Defying the Nazis, The Sharps War, that aired this week. And so here are her words. If you haven't seen it, I strongly recommend it to you. You can view it online at pbs.org, or you can ask me, Karen, to help you borrow the DVD. There are copies around. For this is a story worth knowing. This is a story about stepping up to defy hate. Martha and Waitstill Sharp answered a call to action in 1939 that took them far from their home and Unitarian congregation in Wellesley, Massachusetts, into danger and intrigue in war-torn Europe as they worked to save people from certain death during the Nazi regime. They left the comfort of their home and their two children with relatives to answer a sacred calling much larger than themselves. They risked their own lives over and over as they rescued people throughout the war years and afterward helped refugees. The film dramatically tells of their work, worthy of any spy thriller novel, except more real, because their bold and brilliant work really happened and really did save many lives. The Sharps were not James Bond, but ordinary Unitarians, ordinary Americans, who felt deeply moved by the plight of people oppressed by the Nazis. Jews, intellectuals, scientists, journalists, novelists, clergy and others who were against the Nazis. Waitstill was a Unitarian minister with a Harvard Law degree. Martha was a social worker and the minister's wife, a role that required being her husband's right hand. When they were asked to embark on this dangerous mission by the newly formed Unitarian Service Committee, they were the 18th couple to be asked. 17 others had declined, but they said yes, believing they were called to this great task by something larger than themselves. What calls people like the Sharps and other ordinary people to do these kinds of extraordinary things in the face of evil? Covenant is our theme for the month of September. And my sense is that the greater covenant called to their hearts. And so what is this greater covenant? My colleague, Susan Frederick Gray, who is running for president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, and in Karen's words, who some of you met here last month, Susan offers this perspective about this greater covenant. She writes, "Our lives are inextricably bound up with the lives of others, even if we choose not to see those threads. Being part of a covenantal faith acknowledges those threads and then asks the question, given that we are connected, given that we are siblings, given that we share a future, a planet, a world, how then shall we live?" She reminds us that humanism is an influential piece of our religious tradition, and one of the fundamental teachings of humanism is the notion that ours are the only hands we have to shape the world. Fundamentally, humanity is all connected, and we share a common destiny. Whose are we? We are fundamentally connected and bound to one another. Who needs us? We need one another. Because of this, Shelley writes, our covenants call us not just into relationship with each other, but into relationship with a larger calling. Our covenant is not just an agreement of how we will try together, although it is that, right? How we will try to live together. It is also an essential statement of what we hope to do together. Another colleague, Reverend Sarah LaWall from Boise, Idaho, points out that the grief and the despair that we feel about the state of the world is our spiritual response calling us to action. She says, quote, "We cannot grow spiritually. We cannot deepen our faith or our religious lives without connection to others, without engagement in a deeper connection to humanity. Our Unitarian Universalist tradition and principles speak to this understanding rather clearly in our commitment not only to the inherent worth and dignity of all people, but also in our understanding of interdependence, where our choices, actions, and words have consequences beyond our individual selves and lives. If we live our lives cut off and disconnected from our fellow human beings, no moral vision is possible. And when we ground ourselves in this interconnection, we cannot help but feel called by a greater vision of what is possible, a vision fueled by the values of our liberal religious tradition, compassion, love, and justice. Our choice to be the love is how we actively defy hate." Shelley says, "I wish the world were as simple as little 6-year-old Alex writing out his big-hearted letter of invitation to Omran, the young Syrian refugee. My heart longs, as does mine. My heart longs for that simple open-heartedness where people just help each other and not have to count the cost of doing so. For we each live in several covenantal relationships, in our families, in our marriages and intimate partnerships, with our fellow congregants, and for some of us in our work relationships. These kinds of relationships are to be honored as sacred covenantal bonds." I know that watching the film about the Sharps brought to mind their sacrifices and the sacrifices that I, Shelley, and my family have made over the years so that I could serve as a Unitarian Universalist minister and justice activist. And yet, by the very nature of covenant, it is understood that life will not be perfect, and that sometimes we will choose to sacrifice one form of covenant over another for a while. We all face this kind of choice from time to time in different ways, like choosing to focus on caring for elders at the expense of engaging with our children, right? Or focus on career or school at the expense of family. It was heartbreaking, writes Shelley, to learn that the Sharps ultimately divorced after going through so much together. These are very real risks. But we are called to make these kinds of choices through our lives, navigating them as compassionately as we can. And now we are all being asked to defy hate in ways that we have never had to face before. None of us are going to receive personal phone calls from Peter Morales, the current UUA president, asking us to go on a life-threatening and life-affirming mission to a danger spot somewhere around the globe. But our faith is asking us to reflect individually and collectively in our congregations about how we will defy hate in our time. The possibilities seem rather endless right now. Here are some things that speak to my heart, Shelley's heart, and I imagine that they speak to you as well. Yes, one could travel to Europe or Africa to work with organizations helping refugees, and some of us do travel to help refugees in other places. One could try to rescue children in Aleppo and so many other war-torn places, but you can defy hate much closer to home. And so Shelley asks her congregation, and I ask you, how can we support our Muslim neighbors up the street in a time when they may be in danger of hate crimes, deportation, or even internment, especially depending on the outcome of this upcoming presidential election? What are we willing to do in a world that compares people to Skittles? And so I ask, how can we support refugees who are being resettled right here in Madison? I'm new to this. I just learned on Tuesday when I went to First Unitarian Society to watch this film about Lutheran social services and about Jewish social services and about Open Doors for Refugees, all organizations here in Madison. And so I wonder what we can do to help those organizations. And how will we continue our commitment to addressing racism in Madison? Amidst the tensions of ongoing murders of innocent African Americans, how will we truly step up as allies with our black and brown neighbors in this city, just as Shelley is asking in Ogden, Utah, what they will do there? How many of us will make the commitment to show up at events and protests so that we continue to build these relationships that defy hate? How many of us came to Sustainable Saturday Night last night? Beautiful step. How many of us are really willing to get to know our neighbors? Shelley continues, my Unitarian Universalist ministerial colleagues in Charlotte faced bullets and tear gas just this past week as they joined other clergy in witnessing and counseling during the public demonstrations following the murder of Keith Scott. One colleague barely missed the bullet that took down the man sitting next to him. These are people I know. And yet, day after day, this week, they stood and they marched with the concerned citizens of Charlotte defying hate. She asks if her people are prepared to do that if such violence comes to Ogden. And I ask if we're prepared to do that if such violence comes to Madison. I don't know. I don't know. And let me be clear, defying hate is not always about dodging bullets, thank goodness, but it may mean putting yourself out of your comfort zone. It may mean you want to defy hate in some low-key but very important ways. There's an insert in your order of service. Pull it out and you'll see a variety of suggestions from the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. For your individual consideration on one side, for our collective consideration on the other. And so I urge you to review these ideas, reflect on how you plan to defy hate, talk with each other in coffee hour, talk with me anytime. Just this week, Shelley writes, a meme has made the rounds on Facebook that spoke to me. It is unattributed online, but I looked up the source and discovered it was Adrian Marie Brown, an African-American writer, activist, and scholar of the science fiction novelist Octavia Butler. Brown's quote is this: "Things are not getting worse. They are just getting uncovered. We must hold each other tight and continue to hold back the veil. As we stay awake and engaged, the veil clouding our vision will continue to lift. Ways to defy hate as it is unmasked will start to reveal themselves in fresh and meaningful ways. It is up to us to pay attention, to open our hearts wide, to answer the call of love and justice when it comes. So much depends on our actions, and so much depends on our love. Let's be ready to change the world as we honor the great covenant. May it be so, and may we be so." Your order of service contains an error. Our offertory music today is written by Joan Varner, and it's entitled "When I Am Silent," and Joan has this to say about this piece. "In the fall of 1994, while on a tour of Eastern Europe, I spent a day at the site of the Nazi concentration camp in Auschwitz, Poland. Even though I had studied the history and knew the facts, I was unprepared for the strong feelings I experienced there. I was especially moved by the pictures lining the walls of one of the former dormitories, pictures of young women and teenage boys and girls who died there. The pictures looked like my students, young people with their lives still in front of them. But these young people had no chance to see their future. I was haunted by the picture of one especially beautiful young girl, and in the days which followed, I thought about the things she might have enjoyed and the life which was cruelly taken from her. The words and music for When I Am Silent evolved. The song is dedicated to this girl and all young people whose lives everywhere are taken unjustly."